Well, you may not want to hear this news, but the easy days of living in America are over. You and I, that is, if you're listening as an American, we've been living through the easy time. Seriously. We've been living through the time when most of the world would trade goods for debt. That is, they would ship us their products made in China, made in Korea, made in Japan, etc. And we would give them our debt in the form of treasuries, you know, a bunch of IOUs, because we were printing the currency that was the world reserve currency, but no longer. So believe it or not, America got a free ride for generations, almost since the end of World War II. We got something of a free ride living off the fringe benefits of being the world reserve currency, where we didn't have to actually produce a competitive set of products and services in order to trade with the rest of the world. All we had to do was print currency and use the debt or use the currency to buy the goods. And as a result, the things that you have typically purchased at, you know, Walmart or wherever, or Amazon, they have been significantly less expensive than would be organically the case if the United States did not have, you know, the extreme benefit of being the world reserve currency. And since that exceptional condition is now dissolving as the world turns away from the dollar, you are going to see inflation like you've never seen before. You're going to see the value of the dollar absolutely plummet. And you're going to see real hardship across America. You're going to see people who struggle to eat. You're going to see people who reach a point of desperation. You're going to see joblessness at numbers that you've never seen before. And remember that this is combined with the rise of agentic AI and also AI robots at some point in the years ahead. And this will only contribute to the sense of desperation and poverty. And Trump, of course, has pressured the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates by 25 basis points. Now, that's the interbank lending rate. It doesn't always translate into rates going lower in the debt market, but sometimes it does. But what it really means is that those of you who are trying to save money will earn less for saving money, because the returns on savings have now been lowered. So more and more Americans will be asking themselves, what's the point of saving money? You know, buying treasuries or buying CDs at a bank or even investing in the stock market, etc. The returns, the yields on money will be lower because of these lower interest rates. And probably the rates will be lowered again and again over the next couple of meetings. So we're probably going to get 0.75 point or even a 1 point reduction in interest rates. Of course, the Trump administration wants this desperately in order to refinance the debt at lower rates. But it also means that you'll earn less on money that you try to save. So as prices are going up and up and up because of all the money printing, the yields on saving money will be going down and down and down. At the same time that your money is being rapidly debased because of the money printing and the rise of AI, like I said, this is going to thrust, again, a very large number. I mean, tens of millions of Americans will be thrust into a new chapter of poverty that they have never witnessed, they've never lived through, they never anticipated. The economic reality of America is about to be catastrophically bad. And very few people are ready for that. Now, remember that Trump's first priority is to save the U.S. government at the moment. Or maybe his first priority is to save himself. But a high priority is to save America's debt market, even if that means sacrificing the dollar or the value of the dollar. This is something that Andy Shechtman told me in a recent interview. He says, I think Trump will sacrifice the dollar to save the debt market. And what he means by that is it doesn't matter. I mean, look, Trump's in a tight spot. I'm not going to thrust all the blame for all this on Trump because he inherited, you know, generations of debt and horrible fiscal policies, etc. But Trump is in a tight spot, and it seems to me that the only way to save the United States of America, well, the government and the Treasury, the debt market, in other words, is to sacrifice the value of the dollar. And you'll see that through maybe gold revaluation. You'll see that through stablecoin schemes to try to get more people to buy treasury debt, etc. So this is going to emerge in a lot of different ways. But the bottom line is the dollar will be worth less and less. And if Trump is lucky, he might be able to prevent a total financial collapse of the debt market. But even that is not a certainty. Trump may fail. And I've interviewed people like Colonel Douglas McGregor who think that Trump's efforts will fail. And I tend to agree with that. I tend to agree that we are about to be facing a truly horrific financial catastrophic collapse that will end up thrusting tens of millions of Americans into extreme poverty. Now, you know that owning gold and silver, of course, in my opinion, is the best way to make it through this with your assets intact. That's something that I am practicing. I'm continuing to just dollar cost average into gold and silver. I've got it vaulted. You know, it's in an insured armed vault. You know, I've got some amount that I can have physically in hand if necessary. But I'm stacking gold and silver little by little over time. Even though the price of gold is at an all-time high, I'm still buying it. Now, some people might say, well, it's going to go down. It's going to correct. It's going to lose 10%. I don't care. If gold loses 10%, so be it. I'll buy it at the lower level at that time. You know, I'll just average into gold. At the end of the day, I'm going to own ounces of gold while the people who are wiped out will be holding worthless dollar fiat currency that will not save them. At the end of the day, I would much rather have gold and silver, physical ounces, than really anything else, even crypto. Of course, it's good to have land, etc. We've talked about all these things. But what are we going to do, you and I, when it comes to the hardships of living in a nation where so many of the people around us are suddenly and spontaneously impoverished? What does that look like? Some people that you know will be desperately reaching out to you and asking for emergency help. They will contact you. It could be family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, or former coworkers. They'll be reaching out and saying, I have nothing to eat. Can you help? I have no money to put shoes on the feet of my children. Will you help? And we need to ponder in advance how we can help and also how we can set proper boundaries and what we can do to help the greatest number of people in a way that honors their dignity, but also empowers them instead of, you know, we don't want to trap them in a cycle of handouts, but we do want to honor them as human beings and help as many people as we can because you and I believe in ending suffering. So, how do we do that? Step number one, I believe, is to first make sure your own situation is all squared away so you don't become one of those desperate people. Because you can't help others if you're dying of poverty yourself, right? It's like on an airplane, they say when the mask drops down, the oxygen mask, you put the mask on yourself first and then you help the child next to you or, you know, your child. Why? Because you need to be able to breathe in order to help other people. So how do you breathe in this scenario? I think it's having gold and silver. That's my opinion. Secondly, you need to still protect your assets as you help others and make sure that you don't make yourself a target because there will be a lot of desperation, there will be a lot of crime. So you don't run around, you know, flaunting the fact that you've got some gold coins or some silver coins or you've got food storage or whatever. You keep that private. And when you do help people, to the extent that you can, it's important to work through local organizations, such as a church, Or in my case, we launched a church that achieves this purpose. So of course we would activate the donation branch of our local church in order to assist as many people in need as possible. And we've already done that three separate times with the California fires and the North Carolina floods, or the Florida hurricanes, and then also the Texas floods. I guess that's four times. So we are ready to do that. And of course, we are stockpiling food and other supplies like chlorine dioxide that can help people. And we are prepared to make donations. But not everybody has that depth of, you know, inventory. So be prepared to give a sufficient amount to others in need while also not putting yourself in a desperate situation. You always need to keep enough food to feed you and your family. You need to keep enough ammo to defend yourself. You need to keep enough gold and silver as a form of actual money to be able to get the things that you need. But you also don't want to just be the only guy around or gal who's got money. You want to give. You want to help others. You want to empower others. And you want to help create a community culture of helping others, of demonstrating what it means to live a little bit more like Jesus, you know? Feed the hungry, clothe the poor, and don't be so attached to your own material wealth that you can't part with it, you know? It's okay to part with it if you've got enough or you've got extra. You know, I've got extra. I've been blessed with extra, and I've been stockpiling extra on purpose, anticipating this. So of course, I actually feel blessed by the opportunity to give away things of value to other people that can help them get back on their feet. I feel blessed by that. I mean, it's an honor to be able to help fellow human beings. And I ask you to look into your own heart that when the day comes that there are so many desperate people around you who are hungry, can you part with some of your stockpile if you have a stockpile? Are you able to do that? Can you live with less? Do you have an extra? Do you have a heart to help people? And also, what are the boundaries of that? Because you can't help everyone. There are too many. So who do you help? How do you help them? In what manner do you help them get back on their feet? You know, for example, yeah, you can give people food. This is like the old metaphor, teaching a man to fish instead of just giving him fish. But you could give people food, but also give them a packet of garden seeds at the same time. Say, hey, here's some food to help you right now, but here's some seeds. And what you need to do is start planting food, start growing some of your own food. So I really would love to see you in the spring here. Let's figure out how you can get some tomato plants growing, or some watermelon, or some zucchini, or high protein items, you know, some lentils, or some potatoes. Let's see if we can help you grow some food. So that's critical. As you help people with the immediate needs, you also teach them how to handle their own medium-term needs or longer-term needs. So if somebody also, if they have been a victim of some, like a robbery, and they're asking you, hey, I need a gun. Can you get me a gun? I would not just give a person a gun. If there were someone who I saw as law-abiding and who was worthy of the responsibility of having a firearm, and someone who I thought would act morally and ethically in deploying that firearm, I would absolutely consider giving them a gun along with the proper lessons of how to handle a gun, gun safety, trigger control, you know, the four rules of gun safety, what's beyond your target, etc. But if I thought they were mentally unstable, if I thought they were violent, if I thought they would escalate situations, if I thought they would pop off and shoot people, I would never give them a gun or ammo or lessons. I would only do this to a person that had the character to be able to responsibly handle a firearm. There are a lot of people like that. There are a lot of good people in society who have been anti-gun, you know, until the moment they get robbed and society falls apart, and then suddenly they're like, ah, Second Amendment time, you know? So there may be situations where you want to help a person like that. and just don't give them a gun by itself, or maybe don't even give it to them at all. Maybe ask them to go get a gun and then you'll teach them lessons or something like that. You see what I'm saying? I'm not sure I actually want to give a gun to anybody. There might be situations where that's appropriate, like especially a retired law enforcement person, but they usually have their own guns, or let's say a military veteran, but they usually have their own rifles, etc. Anyway, so anyway, just use your best judgment on this. But my point is, when you help people, try to help them in the long run. Try to empower a person who can carry it forward, and then they can help another person, and then that person can help another person, and so on. Because you don't have enough supplies to just give out to everybody all the time forever. That's not going to fly. You need to help people get on their feet. And that's the best compassion that you can exercise, I think. And if there are people out there who reject that and who say, no, you just give me your food. You have extra food. Give me your food and don't tell me to learn to grow food. I'm not going to garden. I'm not going to plant garden seeds. I'm not going to, you know, that kind of person. Well, that might be the person that you choose not to help because they're not willing to help themselves. Maybe they need another 2 weeks of starvation and then they're going to have some personal development. You know, maybe they're going to reconsider the kind of person they are that nobody wants to help. You know, there are ways to resolve that, like be a better person. People like to help good people. People like to help people who help others. So be a better person if you want to be helped. And then you're paying it forward for everybody to be a better person. Anyway, that's my take on the subject. Of course, I'm always working to empower people with knowledge through the use of our AI engine. It's free of charge. It's called Enoch. You can use it for free at brighteon.ai. I think you'll love it. And it's trained on all kinds of gardening skills and off-grid living and self-reliance and emergency medicine and how to make your own herbal medicine products and, you know, all kinds of things like that. It's a really well-informed AI engine, so you can use it for free. It will help you achieve all these goals. It will help you get through hard times. But the bottom line is, being prepared yourself is critical, and we want to help others get back on their feet so that they can then pass or pay it forward by helping others around them. That's what we do. We multiply our efforts. We create resilient people, or we support resilient people, and we teach them resilience, and then that resilience spreads. That's how society gets back online following a financial collapse event, which is probably coming. So that's my take on it. Oh, and if you want gold and silver, check out our sponsor, which is Battalion Metals. Really great pricing at metalswithmike.com. Metalswithmike.com. It'll take you straight to their website. You can see their prices in real time. Highly trustworthy, insured discreet delivery, plus vaulting services, plus silver IRAs that are fully IRS compliant, etc. Check them out. Check out their services. I think you'll be very happy that you did. Again, it's Battalion Metals at metalswithmike.com. And thank you for listening. Take care.
Power up with our organic whey protein powder, a complete protein packed with amino acids, non-GMO, and lab-tested for purity. Stock up now for your survival pantry at healthrangerstore.com.